And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Well, hello there. Good afternoon. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Tuesday edition of It's Your Turn. Pretty wet out there. More showers to come. And as you heard in the forecast, even maybe some thunderstorms. I didn't hear any thunder this morning. We had some pretty heavy rain at times. Not unheard of to have thunderstorms in early March, but usually it's a little bit later, late March or April. But hey, it's nice, huh?
Yeah.
Nice warm. We'll have warm temperatures for another couple of days, and it's going to get chilly again. Good program lined up for you today. A little bit later, we're going to be chatting with Matthew Kramer. Matthew is the musical director and conductor of the Butler County Symphony Orchestra. And believe it or not, they have another concert. They're next to the last concert of the season coming up at the end of this week on Saturday night. And it's going to be a good one. We'll get all the details from Matthew a little bit later on. But first, we're going to be talking about Butler's Best Buddies, which is a great program, still relatively new in the Butler Area School District, and we'll tell you all about it with the two guests here in the studio with us. Alicia Bailey is an assistant principal at Butler Senior High School. Alicia, nice to have you here again.
Thanks for having us.
And also with us is Caitlin Regis. Am I pronouncing the last name correctly?
You are.
Regis. And Caitlin is a teacher, a special ed teacher at Butler Senior High. Nice to have the two of you back again. It was a year ago, a little more than that.
Yes, just about exactly a year ago that we first came here to talk about Best Buddies.
Mm-hmm. And you were just getting it underway, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And so now we're a year in, and it has been a really great success, hasn't it?
It has. It's definitely exceeded our expectations.
Well, some of our listeners will not have heard you when you were here before, so let's start at the beginning to explain just what Best Buddies is, or in our case, Butler's Best Buddies. Right. Alicia, give us a thumbnail description.
Well, approximately 2 years ago, our special ed transition coordinator came to me and said, "Do you know anything about Best Buddies?" And I didn't. So I researched Best Buddies. And it's a program for students that have a disability paired up with students that are regular education students. So I looked into it. I offered, you know, a meeting with teachers to see if anybody was interested. Michelle Yeager, who is not with us today and is a special ed teacher at the senior high, and Kate Regis, said, absolutely, let's give this a try. So that's how we started the program.
Mm-hmm. And it started, Caitlin, with what age group, what grade group?
So this is currently at the senior high school is grades 10 through 12. And last year, for our first year, we had about a pretty big turnout for it being our first year. We had 76 members, and what it does is it pairs the students in one-to-one friendships. Mm-hmm. So we had about 19 one-to-one friendships, which means a student with a disability was paired with a student without a disability. But this year, we, being our second year, we have just grown significantly. We now have over 100 members, around 102 members, and we have 33 one-to-one friendships. So because of our success last year, the students are realizing just what a wonderful thing this is, and they want it to continue to grow. So much so that we had another teacher at the middle school show interest in wanting to start a club, and our middle school now has a Best Buddies program, and they have around 65 members in that program. And we talked, and we realized that our intermediate high school also needed a program, so that's now our kind of goal for next year, that they're going to be opening up a program there, and that's grades 7 through 9.
So. Now, would this be considered a club activity?
It is a club.
Mm-hmm.
It is a club activity, so we do a lot of events throughout the year. Students, at the beginning of the year, we have the students sign up if they're interested in being a member, and you kind of have to know a little bit about how the members are. So you have peer buddies, and those are students that are committing to be in one-to-one friendships. So they're students that will be hanging out with their student with a disability throughout the year, and they're basically just signing up to be a friend.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have someone called a buddy, and those are the students with disabilities, and they sign up just so that they get to go and meet and join and get more friends, do parties. And then you have associate members that maybe might not have the time commitment, but they still want to be a part of the club. So we offer one activity a month that we provide all of the supplies for. So we usually offer them food and some kind of thing that we do, an outing. Sometimes it's in school, sometimes it's out of school. And then the rest of the month, they hang out just one-on-one. And we actually were able to do something new this year because of our success with our fundraiser last year. We were able to offer, it's called like an outing assistance program. So whenever our students decide that they can hang out one-on-one, they'll put in a request and we buy them gift cards. So that way the kids are going out and they don't have to worry about their finances. And we can actually provide that income for them so they can go out and go to the movies or go bowling or go out to eat. So just give them more opportunities to go out and in the community. So it's not just having to be based at the school.
What a great program, huh? I mean, really.
We are very excited. The first year, we had such success. And then at the middle school, which is grades 5 and 6, they wanted to start it, ask us what they needed to do, got in touch with the Best Buddies Pittsburgh office, because this program is international, and it goes typically from 7 through 12, and then also a great deal of colleges have a Best Buddies program already incorporated in the college. So our kids can move on and get another program when they go on to college. They can participate in Best Buddies too. So when the middle school came up with 65 students that wanted to participate, we were just so excited, you know, to increase the number of people involved in awareness.
Mm. I want to talk more about this, but you have an event coming up, and just in case there are people listening in the car and they're you know, about ready to pull into Giant Eagle or wherever, I want to make sure they don't miss that. So, Caitlin, maybe you can tell us about the
Eggstravaganza
that's coming up.
The Eggstravaganza. So it is a Easter-themed event, and it's on Saturday, April 4th. Basically, it consists of a 5K race, which we call the Easter Egg Dash 5K race, a bunny hop, which is a 1 mile fun run or walk. So if those that don't like to run can go ahead and walk. And
hop was a dance.
And then it has an Easter egg hunt for kids 10 and under. And you can sign up on our website, which is through Run Sign Up. So if you just on Run Sign Up search Best Buddies Easter Egg Dash, or even Google search it, the race would pop up.
Where does this take place?
It's at the Butler Senior High School campus. So the race begins, both the races, and I guess all the events begin at the Butler Senior High School Stadium.
Mm-hmm. And this is April 4th. That's a Saturday?
Yes.
Okay. Can you register as late as the day of the event, or do you have to register in advance?
So if you register online, you will get a discount. So I would recommend that. But if you register we do have day of registration. Don't have the prices in front of me, but there is a day of registration that they can bring, but it would be cash only. And all the information is on the website, so even if they choose to do the day of, that information is available there.
Mm. It's not like $200 or anything.
No,
like
no, no.
It's very affordable and reasonable for families to come out. The reason we are doing this a second year, it was such a success, and all the families that came out for the Easter egg hunt had such a great time, and we give away big prizes all in a great deal of the Easter eggs. There's notes hidden, and you can win a prize. Last year, we gave away bikes. We gave away Kennywood tickets, big prizes, and we're very thankful for the Butler community, because they have donated so much. Our sponsors that will be recognized at the 5K, and local businesses, everything, every little thing helps. We may have gotten a $25 gift card to a restaurant. That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. That's a prize, you know, these kids can win. So it's very exciting, and we're just very thankful for our community to help us support and raise these funds. And as Caitlin said earlier, due to the success of our 5K, we're able to provide students on their one-on-one, like we can get them a McDonald's gift card if that's what they're doing, a movie gift card if they decide that they're going to see the movies. So all of this, all of these funds go back into supporting our students' friendships and helping them be able to hang out and do things any teenager would do.
Are there other teachers, Caitlin, who helped to, because there's some organization that would need to be involved here. I mean, you just don't click the heels of your red shoes together and this all happens.
Well, what's really neat about Best Buddies is it's actually a student-run organization. So there are two advisors, Michelle Yeager and myself, and we are there to provide support. And obviously we do a lot, and Alicia supports us. And we have some teacher volunteers that help at the events when we need them, but mostly it's student-run club. We have students that have to apply to be officers. They go through a pretty intensive interview process to be the officer of this club because the program is student-led. So a lot of our sponsorships that we received are through our students, and they have reached out to community members. They have promoted and advertised about it. I know that at one point they presented at the Butler AM Rotary Club so that they can meet a lot of the business owners in the Butler area to talk about what Best Buddies is and why we're fundraising and why we're holding this event. So, yes, there are staff involved, but I would put a lot of our a lot of the responsibility on the officers, and they do a great job. Both last year and this year, officers have been truly just amazing students that love the program and love being in these friendships and truly are inspiring to work with.
So students are paired up with a student who has a disability. This could be a physical or an intellectual disability?
Yes, intellectual and developmental disabilities is generally the term that they use at Best Buddies.
Mm-hmm. I'm not up to date on the terms right now. I'm getting there. I try to stay up to date on it. We handle this a lot differently than we did a generation or two ago. Thank goodness. Huh?
Yes, we
thank
do.
Thank goodness.
And it's the whole program started overall in general, I would say, when students came to our principals asking for something like this. It initially started with our unified sports program mm-hmm. through bocce, and the students saw that there was an opportunity to do a unified bocce team through Special Olympics, and that's kind of how it just spiraled. And there was so much student request and student involvement in the bocce program that is the reason we found Best Buddies, so we can get a lot more students involved. And from seeing how we've grown already in just this past year, it's really this is something that the students want to have in their school, and this is something the students truly believe in. And it's just great that it continues to be. To me, it's astounding just to see how much the students want inclusion in their school.
That's just what I was going to say. This is a student-led organization. The students want to do this. This
yes.
is not something that they're coerced into doing.
Nope.
Or something like
no,
that.
Not at all. They truly love just participating. And I would say that one of the biggest successes is, before this program, a lot of the students in the self-contained classes, they wouldn't have gotten that opportunity to meet a lot of the other students in the building. And now it's just a totally different perspective, where I see a student walking down the hall that may be in a self-contained class, but they're saying hello to about five or six other students in the hallway. They're saying hello back, and that they actually know each other. They talk to each other outside of school. And it's not just their one person that's their peer buddy. They also get to know the associate members. And when you join this club, all of a sudden you have 100 new friends. So you can just see the confidence and some of our students and their growth. They're wanting to go out into the community. They're wanting to be a little bit more social. And I think that's just that's the whole point of the club, that a lot of our students struggle with that. that interaction. And mm-hmm. here we have a club with members that are understanding and that they want to be there, and they're just, their personalities are coming just alive.
Help me a little bit with the language so that I understand where we're going.
Mm-hmm.
Education-wise, public education, at least in the Butler District, with students who have disabilities. You mentioned the term self-contained classroom. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us what that is?
So a self-contained classroom just means it's a little bit more learning support services. So it would be like an autistic support classroom or a life skills classroom or a...
Emotional
support classroom. And it's not that the students don't go out. They'll still go out and do electives with the general education students, but a lot of times they need to have that more intensive support services available. Mm-hmm. So they'll mm-hmm. be in those classrooms for a lot more of the instructional day than just out and about.
I'm a baby boomer. I can remember special ed when I was in elementary school. It was in one classroom. All the kids, one through six, were in there. We never saw them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They went into this one room in the edge of the building, and it was horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't realize it at the time, and I was in a pretty small rural school district at the time, but... Mm-hmm. I mean, you think back on that, you just cringe.
Yeah, right.
We're very fortunate at Butler. Our special ed department, the director of special ed and assistant director of special ed and transition coordinator, the majority of our students are fully included, which means they're out for the majority of their classes. We have students, I would say there may be about 50 out of 1,500 students that do a lot of their day in a specialized classroom. But within that, we have so many students that go to the VOTEC from those specialized classrooms mm-hmm. or all of their specials. So we have people going to the, or students going to the VOTEC to learn a skill, a trade, culinary arts, graphic designs. The VOTEC offers so much. And our students love going, you know, to the VOTEC also. So we're very fortunate in the day and age that we live that the majority of our students are out in regular classrooms the majority of their day. But there are some students that do need a smaller setting and do need more direct one-on-one instruction. And so we're able to provide that also.
Mm-hmm. When I think of students with a disability, we sometimes, although not overtly ostracizing them, we de facto we do it when we don't realize that they need friendship, they need companionship, just like students in general education.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know?
And the same barriers, whether you're regular ed or special ed, exist with all teenagers. Being confident in themselves or being able to start an interaction with another student to make a new friend. All kids have those issues. Some may be more severe or, you know, just more shy than somebody else. Mm-hmm. We all have different personalities, and this club really gives them a safe spot to be able to do that, meet somebody without worrying that of rejection or anything. These kids are there for a reason. So like Kate said earlier, when you join this club, right now we have over 100 people that are there to be your friend. So it takes out that whole area of, oh, would I be rejected? Won't I be accepted? No, they know when they're walking into one of our club meetings that they're accepted. It's a safe space. They can gain skills that they can use for the rest of their life about introducing themselves to people, making new friends, having conversations, being appropriate in all kinds of different settings. So our students go out quite a bit in the community. And one of the best ones that we added this year was the Christmas parade.
Yes.
We had a float in it, and it was the Grinch. And so a lot of our students participated in that. And this was activity that our club did, and the kids had a blast.
They did. They loved it. We often start with our activities, the first like two or three activities are done during the school day. But then as the year progresses, that's where we start to say, okay, well, let's go out in the community. Let's do a bowling night. Let's do a Christmas parade. And the Christmas parade, they loved it. They loved participating. The kids stayed after and worked on the float. Win-win, but that's okay.
There's always next year.
There is always, and we're very motivated to come back next year. First year, we now have it under our belt, but the fact that they just all left with smiles on their face, and I mean, we were out there all day preparing for that float, and the fact that they got to participate and just they got to wave and walk in a parade, a lot of our kids never have that opportunity, mm-hmm. and they thought it was just great. They thought it was great building the float and being a part of that. Other activities we've done, we just did a paint night at Brushes and Barstools. That is a great place to go, by the way. Just shouting out to them. But it was wonderful, and they, you know, catered to all of our different students' ability levels, and they really enjoyed that. So they got to do a painting. We've done something called Fans in the Stands. Actually, we had two events for Fans in the Stands this year, which is where we actually went out and supported our Unified Bocce program, because a lot of our members have a crossover where they're on the Unified Bocce team and they're in Best Buddies. So we stayed after school, had pizza, made signs, and then stayed on to cheer our team. And what was really neat about this year was that one of the Fans in the Stands we were able to combine together with the middle school. So we were able to get the middle school Best Buddies group shipped up to the senior high school, and we were able to celebrate Fans in the Stands together. So that was a really neat thing. Other things we've done are just, you know, a Friendsgiving Christmas party. Something new this year too, our student council. So we have some of our Best Money members that are also student council members, and the student council said that they wanted to offer a sensory friendly dance because some of our students are not able to be around the normal dances because the music's too loud. It's just too much chaos. So they wanted to offer something that could be open to all of our students that have special needs.
A sensory friendly
dance? Yes, a sensory friendly dance.
So we're learning new
tools. Yes. It's where the music's not so loud. They don't have to dress up. They're going to be a little casual, but we're going to be offering a sensory-friendly dance coming up at the end of this month. So we're really excited about that, that Stuco has really decided to partner with Best Buddies to provide that opportunity for them.
And that's what we're seeing, that it's just spreading and growing. And so it's not just a club within itself. Stuco is participating with us. Our Stand Tall group has been fantastic and invited the Best Buddies to Stand Tall events that are provided for the in the community. So it's like all of these groups sort of extending and inviting and just interacting with each other, and it's just building a stronger community within the school.
I happen to know what Unified Bocce is, but I'm betting some of our listeners don't, so we better explain that.
I'm a ref. I should know this.
So Unified Bocce is with the Special Olympics, and so it is a member of a team of eight students. Four are regular ed, and four have some type of disability, and that's a team. Our first year that we started it, we had so many interested. We actually had enough to create two teams. So we do have two teams in the Butler Senior High that compete, and it's bocce. I don't know if anyone has ever played bocce. It's a great sport, fun times.
You don't have to tell the Italian.
I know. We love to play it. So the kids practice. They have a representative come in and help coach, Michelle Yeager and Julie Picani, two teachers at the senior high again, work with the students, and then they go to matches. There's actually a state meet for bocce for the Special Olympics. So it's competitive. They're very, you know, excited about winning when they do. And, you know, again, it's that team building. They love to be involved and included. And Michelle Yeager, who is both the advisor to Best Buddies and to Unified Bocce, again, how these things are just spilling over into each other and, you know, uniting kids across different clubs and paths.
And bocce has grown so much that they also have, we have two teams and a practice squad now where we do an intramural bocce day once a week where any student that's interested in playing bocce, so if they were not able to make one of those 16 spots, they can go ahead and at least participate and stay after school for practices. So a lot of kids sign up for that as well.
You have over 100 members now. So where do you meet? You must have to go to the gym or somewhere. You need a pretty large space.
Well, Mr. Helsel is our choral director, and he's fantastic about letting us borrow his space. During his lunch period, we do a lot of activities in the choral room. We do meet in the cafeteria. That's where they will practice bocce too, after school in the cafeteria, because we can move all the tables and, you know, have a clean floor to lay down the bocce courts. And they're very, I don't know, in June, like, interesting. Our bocce courts are made out of tubing, so it's fantastic. They can be taken apart and put in a large garbage can and just moved, and then they come out and the kids put them back together. And so it's fantastic. We adjust. We're very flexible, you know. Wherever there's space. So
it's so important that our listeners hear about a program like this. I mean, it's just so good, really. And it's taken off tremendously in just a year.
Yes. Yeah. So a lot of the planning the prior to last year was our first full year. This is our second year. We've already added the 5-6 building. And hopefully by the start of next school year, 7, 8, and 9 will be included. So it will be a 5-12 program here in the district. We're very excited about that.
Obviously, the administration has given their imprimatur for this event.
Very supportive.
Absolutely. Dr. Wiley, the building principal, is so very involved in like the Special Olympics and was the one who really wanted to do the unified bocce. And he has reffed matches and things like that. And our special ed director, Aaron Roy, have, again, a big push for inclusion and having these students, you know, participate. And Dr. White is fantastic with, I come to him with an idea, and he says, go for it. So very supportive. All the administration and the teachers are very, very supportive and want to participate as much as they can. So it's great.
You need a referee for unified bocce.
You do.
I had two of them.
I had to go to referee school to learn how to be a bocce ref this year.
More competitive than I would have thought.
It is competitive.
It is a sport. That's one thing that they strictly enforce, that it is a sport. It's a competitive sport, but it's a competitive sport where all students have the opportunity to participate and be successful.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go over your event coming up here, and it's about a month away now, April 4th. This is March 3rd, because this, I'm imagining, is one of your major fundraisers, how you are able to support so many of these activities that your peer-to-peer groups do.
Yes. So, like I said, the 5K comes first. I think that starts at 10 a.m., so it's a little bit later in the day. It's just around the intermediate and senior high school campuses. Which is timed by the Miles of Smiles timing services. And then and that is a race, so you have opportunities to win medals. So there are 5 different age groups, and each age group will have a chance to win for second or third place for the medals, both male and female. And then there's an overall winner for both male and female where they get an opportunity to win a plaque. So these are medals, so you can, if you're a competitor, you can participate, or if you're just a runner and want to get out and enjoy the weather, hopefully it's good, enjoy the day. But it's really, we tried to gear this towards a big family type of atmosphere. So we also have the bunny hop, which is that 1 mile fun runner walk. So a lot of parents decide to do that with their children. They'll come out and participate, because right after that we have an Easter egg hunt. And like Alicia had mentioned earlier, our Easter egg hunt is a little bit different than maybe others, where every egg will have something in it, whether it be candy, a sticker, a temporary tattoo. But it also has huge prizes, where we have, I think at this point we have, I think I was looking at about 30 different businesses that have provided us with prizes, and they're pretty big. Like, it includes, yeah, I think the Children's Museum down in Pittsburgh. It has the Pittsburgh Zoo and Aquarium. I know that Living Treasures, both locations with the new one, are some of the examples of places that have been so generous to sponsor us with gifts and prizes, which there would be a little note in their egg that says, come pick up your awesome prize. So even though we're charging $5, which once again, that money goes to support our cause, they have a chance to walk away with anywhere from like a family pack to the Children's Museum or a $25 gift card to one of the jump parks. I think there's even a jump park that it's $50 gift card, so they can walk away with that. So it's an exciting event. And I have a 2-year-old at home that'll be 3. So my experience going to egg hunts was my son would maybe get 1 or 2 eggs and then he would be done. So we try to gear our egg hunt to give every student, every kid the opportunity to really get some eggs and win a prize. So we have actually 5 categories. So it's like the 2 and under category, 3 and 4 year olds, 5 and 6 year olds, 7, 8 year olds, and then 9 and 10 year olds. So every category, we try to make sure that the eggs match the type of the age of this child. So that way they're walking away with things that they can actually eat. For example, little kids can eat little animal crackers or things like that, versus the older kids that might enjoy some candy or some bigger prizes. So
I love what you're doing.
Thank you.
I really do. You can register in advance if you'd like to participate and help them raise some money for the Easter Egg Dash. That's the 5K, or the Bunny Hop, which is the 1 mile fun run or fun walk, whatever you want to do, or half and a half, whatever. And then the Easter egg hunt. And you can register. How do you do that again, Caitlin?
So there is it's called Run Sign Up, which is, it's if you just do that, it's Best Buddies Easter Egg Dash, or I think you can even Google search it. I think I put it everywhere on the internet at this point. I think it's also advertised in the Butler Air School District on that webpage as well.
Wow, it's great stuff, and the Butler's Best Buddies program is fantastic. Yeah. Thanks for giving us an update. We'll use this on the news, too, when we get a little closer to the big day, Saturday, April 4th, not all that far away. Right?
Yes, right. We're excited.
Yeah. Thank goodness April's not that far away. Alicia Bailey is the assistant principal at Butler Senior High School. Caitlin Regas is a special ed teacher and one of the advisors for Butler's Best Buddies. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having us.
More to come. We'll take a break. We're going to be talking with Matthew Kramer. He's the musical director and the conductor of the Butler County Symphony Orchestra. He's a great guy, too. He really is. Wait till you hear about the concert coming up at Intermediate High School this Saturday. If you're a fan of Arthur Fiedler and the Boston Pops, you'll love it. We've got details coming up here in just a couple of minutes. Stick around. We'll be right back.
This time of year, it's fish fry time at Michael's Restaurant. You can't beat the great beer-battered fish with fries. You start looking forward to it the moment Lent arrives. Start your family tradition of enjoying fish fry dinners at Michael's Restaurant. That's Michael's Restaurant, with great homemade food all year long.
Tri-Rivers 2020. Focus on your musculoskeletal health.
I'm Dr. James Craig from Tri-Rivers. As a physical medicine and rehabilitation specialist, I perform fluoroscopically guided injections in our offices to treat chronic pain. This non-operative x-ray guidance approach allows me to inject the medication into various sites throughout the body with maximum accuracy. To learn more or schedule an appointment, please visit TriRiversMSK.com or call 1-866-874-7483.
Firefighters, police, EMTs, township supervisors, and others are typically the first on scene of an emergency. They face the greatest risk of electrical contacts. Central Electric Cooperative is holding a free first responders electrical hazards training on April 2nd. This training is intended to provide the necessary knowledge to work safely in emergencies involving electric utility lines. Attendees will view a high voltage demonstration as well as a safety presentation. Light refreshments and informational materials will be provided. Central Electric's training is designed to supplement, not replace, your organization's standard operating procedures. If your organization would like to attend or needs more information, please contact Natalie Russell at 800-521-0570, extension 2208. This is Dylan Link for Central Electric Cooperative. We hope to see you there. This institution is an equal opportunity provider and employer.
Now, through March 19th, West End Tire and Service is offering one heck of a pre-spring deal. Buy any four tires and receive a free diagnostic alignment check. That's a $30 value. West End Tire and Service carries tires for everything from cars, trucks, and SUVs to heavy-duty trucks, skid loaders, and even farm vehicles. Plus, they've expanded and improved their mechanical services to include shocks and struts, brakes, oil changes, alignments, tire rotation, tire repair, and more. Stop by and see what's new and like them on Facebook. West End Tire and Service, West Cunningham Street, Butler, next to Battery Warehouse Plus.
Welcome back, good friends. It is the Tuesday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR. Dave Malarkey is my name, and our guest visits with us by telephone. It's Matthew Kramer. Matthew is the musical director and conductor of the Butler County Symphony Orchestra. Matthew, good to talk with you again.
Great to be back on your program, Dave.
It's another concert coming up this weekend, this Saturday night, for the Butler County Symphony Orchestra. Boy, as I look at the program, it's hard to believe it's the next to the last concert of the current season. How can that be, Matthew?
Time just continues to fly by despite my best efforts to keep us in the, you know, the same calendar spot every year. It just seems like we're constantly discussing this. It's just the time does fly by. We've had a number of really phenomenal performances this season, as we always do, and you know, we kind of live in two worlds because we're putting the finishing touches on next season, which we'll announce at our last April program. But our attention now turns, of course, to this great second-to-last concert.
And you're going to be concentrating on a legendary figure in terms of Pop's concert, and that would be the late Arthur Fiedler.
That's right. It's a tribute to this great musician. The conductor, really, who established what American Pop's programming is, and it's such a generic term now that we use for so many different kinds of concerts that we produce. But what is Pop's programming? Well, when Arthur Fiedler took the helm of the Boston Pops in the 1930s, he was already the 18th conductor, if you can believe that, of the Pops. It had been around since the late 1800s, and it was really just light classical music. But with Arthur Fiedler at the helm of the Boston Pops for almost, well, actually for 50 years, he helped to establish, again, American Pops program, that it wasn't just Strauss waltzes, but they were light musical miniatures, popular music, movie scores, rock music even. It's just Arthur Fiedler's impact, really, on American orchestral music is even much more than just popular programming. He was a fine classical musician as well. So really a revered figure in the history of American orchestras.
Let's talk a little bit about terms here, Matthew, because some of our listeners may be confused. There's the Boston Symphony Orchestra, and then there's the Boston Pops. It's really the same group, right? It's just the type of music that they're playing for that particular program.
That's exactly right. The Boston Pops brand was established 3 years after the Boston Symphony was established, and in order to keep their branding separate, you know, the kinds of programs that the organization is producing, they did give the separate titles, but it is the same orchestra, save for just a few personnel changes. Usually the first chair musicians of the symphony aren't required to play in the Pops orchestra, but you'll see the same faces. It's the same organization. You know, it's all under the same umbrella. But it's really an iconic brand, is the Boston Pops. And there are other monikers by which it has gone to with Arthur Fiedler, the Esplanade Orchestra. But really the Boston Pops is, the premier Pops orchestra in the United States. And there are other, versions of this kind of branding. The Cincinnati Symphony, for example, also has the Cincinnati Pops. Same orchestra, same hall, different conductors, but again, the same musicians on the stage. So they just play, during different weeks. And again, the impact of Pop's programming, it is really everything that is not a classical orchestra concert is what is essentially Pop. So again, that can be Broadway, it can be gospel and rock and movie scores. It's just Pop's programming is very extensive.
My personal introduction to the Boston Symphony came through, and I'm sure that I'm not alone. I was a little kid. I'm thinking, I might be 7 or 8 years old, something like that. I was on vacation at my my aunt's in Indianapolis, of all places. I did not know that's where you are. But she had an extensive record collection, one of which was a recording by Arthur Fiedler and the Boston Pops, which I listened to. And that was one of the things that he was well known for. He made a ton of recordings, popular recordings, most of them, I would guess, vinyl records, while he was the director of the Boston Pops, right?
That's absolutely right. Again, the impact there in the recording business was extensive as well, and that's really what helped to establish the brand of the Boston Pops as the country's, really the world's, preeminent Pops orchestra. And he recorded everything from Strauss waltzes to these wonderful little Leroy Anderson miniatures, to full orchestral scores. He recorded Dvorak's New World Symphony. As I mentioned earlier, he was a very fine musician, a very fine classical musician as well. And actually, his final recording, just shortly before he passed away, was of disco music. This is in the late 70s. So, I mean, everything that could be recorded, they recorded, and that helped spread the sounds of the orchestra. And like you mentioned perfectly there, many, many people were exposed to classical music because of these Boston Pops recordings that really covered the full gamut of his tenure, 50 years that was.
That's how long he was the director of the Boston Pops, 50 years. Wow. Wow.
50 years, followed by, of course, the great John Williams, who had the helm for about 15 years, and John Williams' impact was largely with movie scores, not only his own movie scores, but other Hollywood composers. And then when John Williams stepped down, Keith Lockhart had taken the helm, and he's been there already over 20 years with the Boston Pops, and has expanded their programming more towards rock and big-name individual artists who appear quite often with the Pops. So each director's had their impact, but 50 years, Arthur Fiedler was at the helm.
I just saw, coincidentally, a Wire story, and I was within the past week, I believe, on Keith Lockhart marking his anniversary with the Boston Pops, and he said he can't believe he's been there that long. Time has flown by. So the Butler County Symphony Orchestra is going to be dedicating their concert this Saturday night to Arthur Fiedler's Pops. What are we going to hear on the program Saturday at Butler Intermediate High School Auditorium, Matthew?
This was the real challenge, Dave, is to try to figure out how to encapsulate Arthur Fiedler's impact, on programming over 50 years in a 80-minute concert. And it was not easy to do, let me tell you. So I thought we would just kind of put together a menu of works that really were the full gamut of his musical reach. Of course, he started off when he took over the Pops in the mold of his predecessors. And that mold, again, was light classical music. The founder of the Boston Pops, their philosophy really was that it was music that was not overly complicated to the ear, was often very happy, very sprightly music, classical music. So those Strauss polkas and waltzes were at the top of the list. But we're going to start off with an overture that is easily recognizable, Franz von Suppe's Light Cavalry Overture. And it's a selection that is heard so often and on recordings and in popular culture. It was used, if you'll remember, the disco craze created the Hooked on Classics, where they would take classical selections and put a disco beat to it. Mm-hmm. Light Cavalry Overture is one of the most popular light classical works. We've also got some shorter Strauss selections. Henry Mancini, with very important ties, of course, to Western Pennsylvania. We have his Moon River, a couple of selections by Leroy Anderson, who, of course, penned the great sleigh ride we hear every Christmas in the holiday season. But he was an orchestrator and arranger for the Pops for many, many years, and had these little three-minute miniatures, the Waltzing Cat, the Typewriter, and we have the great Blue Tango. I was just thinking of the Typewriter. We had to go through some trouble to find a typewriter to bring on stage with us. So it's these little miniatures are marvelous, and a much more popular, up-to-date second half of the program with selections from the Beatles, and Tchaikovsky's 1812 overture as well.
Now, some of our listeners might be surprised to think, wow, the Butler County Symphony playing a Beatles medley? Wow, how about that?
There are a number of them. I got to tell you, not all of them are good. In fact, I would say most of them are pretty bad. That if these arrangements just never really quite come off the way that John Lennon and Paul McCartney obviously sang these standards. But this is an ingenious arrangement by Bruce Healy that realizing that you can never substitute instruments for the recorded voice, so instead turn these great selections, iconic selections, really of the Beatles, into kind of a symphonic work. So incorporating some symphonic techniques that composers use from variations, the variation form, and crafted, I think, a really nice arrangement. We have cut it down to about six or seven songs in that arrangement. They each kind of get their own little touch as stylistically, things that are more Bach-influenced and things that are more to the true nature of the song. But it is a quite fun little arrangement. And I neglected to mention that we also do throw in there a tribute to film composer arranged by John Williams, because that is such a large part of what Pops programming is, especially nowadays, the influence and the focus really on film scoring. So there's a great tribute to some really iconic film scores on the second half of that program as well.
Is John Williams still alive? I can't remember whether he's died or not.
It's remarkable. It really is. 87 years old, and he's still, I would say, at the zenith of his powers here. He's still composing. He just completed the last Star Wars movie, which came out this past December. So he was behind the film scoring for all nine of those major movies in the series, or the three different sets of trilogies. And he's still in the works now for several productions that are coming up here. So yes, 87 years old, and unlike so many composers in the classical canon that lived long lives, not all of them had that well of inspiration, those melodies that were still fertile, in their later years. Many of them stopped composing altogether. Sibelius, for example, stopped composing the last 50 years of his life, Rossini the same, but John Williams has not slowed down one bit. He's still out there guest conducting the major orchestras. He was conducting the Vienna Philharmonic just a month ago, so the man has not slowed down one bit as he's pushing 90.
Unbelievable. Matthew, stick around for, I have a couple more questions for you. I need to take a break here, though. I've had a few more minutes to chat with Matthew Kramer here on this segment of It's Your Turn on WISR. We will be right back. The Spencer D. Geibel Funeral Home and Cremation Services, located at 140 Newcastle Road. It's about halfway up Newcastle Hill, just down from the State Police Barracks. This is the Butler area's newest funeral home, Spencer D. Geibel Funeral Home, the first and only value-designed funeral home, built specifically for that purpose. A funeral home that offers styles, types, and levels of service that others are not able or willing to offer. They can transfer all prearranged funeral services and policies as well. It's an entirely new idea. It's local, and there's a hometown gentleman running the operation, Spencer D. Geibel. Spencer D. Geibel Funeral Home and Cremation Services, 140 Newcastle Road in Butler. Not affiliated with any other funeral home.
When you or someone you care for needs skilled nursing and or physical therapy, Concordia Visiting Nurses can help relieve the stress you're feeling and put your mind at ease. Concordia Visiting Nurses professional services bring the best in expert care right into your own home. If your doctor prescribes home health care upon discharge from the hospital or from his or her office, please choose Concordia Visiting Nurses.
Talking with Matthew Kramer on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. Matthew, of course, is the musical director and conductor of the Butler County Symphony, and they have another concert coming up this Saturday evening at Butler Intermediate High School Auditorium. Ticket information, of course, from the Symphony office. It's on the Diamond, downtown Butler, or you can check online at butlersymphony.org. All the ticket information is there. The program for this Saturday evening's concert is entitled Arthur Fiedler's Pops. Matthew, let's talk a little bit about Arthur Fiedler, even for folks who would know that he was the longtime and legendary conductor of the Boston Pops, might not know a whole lot about his life. I'm assuming that he was a musician of some skill in addition to being a conductor.
That's right. He came from a very musical family. He was actually born in Boston. His father was a violinist in the Boston Symphony, and he retired and moved the family to Europe, to Vienna. Actually, the Fiedler's parents were immigrants, Austrian immigrants. So when his father retired from the Boston Symphony, they moved over to Austria. Fiedler played the violin. They then subsequently moved to Berlin sometime later, and he continued his musical studies before coming back to Boston. And, you know, at a relatively young age for conductors, took over the helm of the Boston Pops 1930. And as I mentioned, that 50-year tenure lasted until his death in late 1979. But he was a prominent guest conductor too. He was the conductor for the San Francisco Pops programs for over 20 years. He conducted classical programs with orchestras in this country as well. But his musical roots, you know, really can be traced back to his father and his mother, who was also a very fine musician. So he grew up with you know, these Strauss waltzes and the Von Suppe overtures and Mozart, Beethoven, Haydn, of course, in the household. So he was always surrounded by music. Which is why I think he was such a successful musician on the podium, that he was a very fine, classically trained musician who just happened to have interest in, you know, a lot of these other musical forms, from Broadway to, you know, to gospel and rock and you know, you name it. He was always up on current musical styles, which is what made the Pops program so exciting. You know, if you've ever been to Symphony Hall in Boston, you have these great seats, you know, in this beautiful, world-class, very historic concert hall. But for the Pops programs, they take those seats out and they set up the auditorium in banquet style. So you have seats around tables with white cloths, and you know, you're catered on during the concert. So that's so much of what makes the Pops format so much different than a traditional concert, where you have to come in and, you know, really just be so attentive and so still. Pops programming is by nature more laid back, more relaxed, come as you are, and just have a good time, which is what I think maintains its popular appeal for orchestras, is that, you know, it's really a way of bringing in people who might not be comfortable sitting and listening to a full Brahms symphony, for example.
Was Fiedler a particularly demonstrative conductor? Probably most folks will remember seeing him at the bicentennial celebration on the 4th of July in 1976, when he conducted the Boston Pops at an outdoor concert, and there were fireworks and the 1812 overture and all kind of stuff going on. I mean, if you watched it, you never forget it.
Oh, and he was already well into his 80s by that point, and, you know, just not slowing down at all. That, you know, he was obviously in love with what he was doing. He cared very passionately about music, and I think that shows in his conducting. You know, you have all manners of conductors now, the Leonard Bernstein mold of jumping into the air and just, you know, throwing your arms around. And, you know, Fiedler, again, comes from, you know, from Central European traditions, and I think was able to kind of keep that mold of conducting, which was, you know, demonstrative but not overly flamboyant on the podium. But still, I mean, just like, as we mentioned, John Williams, just able to produce a great amount of music, you know, recordings, and his workload didn't seem to slow down. You know, even at an advanced age, it somehow music seemed to keep him young, which was just fascinating.
And, yes, listeners, you will hear the 1812 Overture this Saturday night, because that'll be part of the program for the Butler County Symphony, Arthur Fiedler's Pops. Concert time is 7:30 this Saturday night. Are you going to talk before this concert or no, Matthew?
There will be a pre-concert lecture just to discuss, you know, like we have on this program here, his legacy, the kind of music that he recorded with the orchestra and their touring, and, you know, a little history of Pops program in the United States. And I also want to mention that we have some very talented young musicians who are joining us from Butler High School. Many orchestras have side-by-side programs where students get to sit next to a professional musician on stage during the concert. We're delighted that both members of the Butler High School Orchestra and band program, we've got some very talented students who have been given some individual instruction with our musicians over the past 2 weeks. We'll have them in for some rehearsals Friday night and Saturday afternoon, and then they'll join us on stage. You know, what we really hope is a very impactful opportunity for them to be able to play in a professional orchestra. We're going to have a few selections from Bizet's Carmen, where they'll be joining us during the second half, and, you know, really, I think, a terrific opportunity for us to continue to impact music education in the county.
Oh, what a thrill. What an opportunity. I would be petrified, though, to do that if I was in high school.
I remember my first opportunity doing it with the Indianapolis Symphony some 30-some years ago, and it can be a little scary.
One final question. Are there pops in European countries, or is that pretty much strictly an American thing, a pops orchestra?
No, it's very interesting that you mentioned that. You know, the origins of the pops, you know, in some ways you can trace it back to England because, you know, Arthur Sullivan and Gilbert and Sullivan operettas, for example, were just a form of light music. And so light classical music was very popular in the late 19th century in England in particular. But really the origins of what we consider pops, or at least the name that we've given it, pops, is a result of, you know, the Arthur Fiedler and the Boston Pops and that legacy. But more and more orchestras are in Europe, going this direction. For example, you recall I mentioned John Williams conducting the Vienna Philharmonic in his movie scores. So the Vienna Philharmonic, which is, you know, one of the most, traditional orchestras in history, you know, of course, with their origins of having premiered Brahms symphonies, that they don't perform, you know, anything else other than classical music. But in the last few decades, you know, even you'll see pops programming getting into the Musikverein in Austria. Berlin Philharmonic does as well. They don't do nearly the extensive kind of pops programming that we have here with our orchestras. Many times they'll have their own pops orchestras over there. There is, for example, a pops orchestra in Berlin that, you know, specializes in this, and also in London. But no, it is now becoming quite well known across the orchestral world that pops programming is something that audiences all enjoy.
I would never have thought of Gilbert and Sullivan as precursors of this, but now that you mention, yes, HMS Pinafore.
Okay. Absolutely right.
Matthew, it's always good to talk with you. Thanks for spending some time with us here today, and we'll look forward to a great concert this Saturday night.
I appreciate that, Dave. Thank you so much.
Sure. So long. Matthew Kramer, he is really, in addition to being obviously a very talented musician and conductor, he's a really nice guy, really is. And if you want a good time this Saturday night, pick up a symphony or a pair of tickets for the symphony this Saturday night. They're available at the symphony office, the Butler Symphony Office, downtown Butler. It's on the Diamond, got a corner from the courthouse, or you can go online at butlersymphony.org and get all the information with regard to tickets and so on. Butler Intermediate High School Auditorium this Saturday night. Concert time 7:30. Nice and early concert time, so you're not out too late. And this will be the next to the last concert on the symphony schedule for this year, next to the last one. So that's this Saturday. Coming up on tomorrow's program, we have Penn State Extension visiting with us tomorrow. And also we'll be talking with the next year Spotlight Nonprofit of the Month on the Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR. So hope you can be with us for that on tomorrow's program, the Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn. And later in the week, we'll be chatting with folks from the National Alliance for Mental Illness. So that'll be on Thursday. And we'll have other guests, too, as we move through the rest of the week. It's only Tuesday. I'm Dave Malarkey. Enjoy the rest of the day. Stay dry. And we'll see you tomorrow at 12:30 for the Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey. here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 12:30 to 1:30, right here on WISR 680.
Change my mind.